This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, new polling shows a majority of Americans are concerned about the threat of politically motivated violence. We'll talk with an expert on conflict who says we can bring down that tension. And good news, we already know how to do it. Now it's time for Food Friday, and I am looking for a little help from you today. Our scheduled guest, you may have heard me talking about making your own pasta. Well, we're not reaching that guest, but it's been a while since we've done a Food Friday focused on you. So you can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Want to hear your cooking stories. What are you excited about cooking maybe tonight or this weekend? Is there something still that you're cooking out of your own garden or your local farmer's market that you are enjoying a lot? What is something you would like to learn about when it comes to cooking? Why, that could give us an idea for future Food Fridays, hopefully with guests who show up. And is there a food fail that you would be interested in sharing with us today? Something you tried to cook and it didn't come out quite the way you wanted to. And how about your next cooking challenge? You know, one for me might be making my own pasta someday. Something I've always thought, it's too complicated for old Rob. But maybe I'll give it a try sometime. You can join in now. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. While you pick up and dial that phone, I'll share some of my answers to the questions I just posed. Tonight, I'm going to cook a squash curry. I got a couple of them delicata squashes. I'm not sure yet. Chicken, I got some tofu, going to be one or the other. Coconut milk or sour curry, I got some options to work with. I'm going to serve it over rice, cube up that squash, cook it in for a while. Some spices, not too spicy though for me. And I've a tip I learned on Food Friday, I've got an old coffee grinder and I've got cumin seeds. I'm going to grind them up and coriander seeds and some black peppercorns. And that is probably the biggest lesson I've learned from Food Friday is grinding those spices to get extra flavor. It's not a lot of extra work. Second lesson is using fresh herbs. I just made a squash soup last week. Lots of cilantro in it. Cilantro goes in right at the end because the way I used to cook, it went in at the beginning and it ended up, you know, still being green, but kind of green and flavorless and useless. Cooking fails. You may have heard me talk about this one before. So mom's side of the family is all Polish. My grandma made pierogies. This is a big chore. And in my 20s, I'm like, I'm going to try to make pierogies by guessing. I didn't have a cookbook. I didn't have a recipe or anything. That is one of the few inedible outcomes I've had in my life of cooking. A pot with floating dough and floating stuffing ingredients. Yeah, there's a lot of thinking that goes into that pierogi making. Looking for your cooking stories. What are you cooking now? Share a cooking fail. What is a kitchen challenge you are looking to take up? Maybe for the holiday season. Join in at what are you cooking right now or tonight? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. You are the star of the show today, and Mark is going to start us off in Suamico. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good. What's your cooking plan?
So I didn't know that the rain was going to come this soon. Otherwise, I was going to grill. But I had these egg white wrappers in the fridge, and I've heard that they're really good for me. So I'm just going to my local fish house, and I'm going to buy some fish. I'm going to deep fry some fish and try those egg white wrappers for my fish tacos.
What is an egg white wrapper? I think it's literally like a taco or a tortilla, but made out of egg whites?
Yes. And they're literally, you can buy them flavored, but the kind that I have are flavorless. And they kind of take on the flavor of whatever's inside of it. So I'm really anxious to see how this turns out.
I'm excited too, Mark. And it's fish, right? You got to have a particular kind of fish in mind to fry up for the taco?
Well, I was going to deep fry the bread and deep fry some cod. So
okay.
We're in Wisconsin, so we got to do that, right?
Straight ahead. Yeah. Where can you get cod in Wisconsin? I don't know. Mark, thank you so much for starting us off at 800-642-1234 on a special, unplanned, caller-only edition of Food Friday. Looks like we got some people getting queued up here. Here we go. Lauren is with us in Algoma. Lauren, hi. Oop, are you there, Lauren? All right, I think we fumbled that a little. How about, let's try it. Lauren, are you there? Huh. Well, that's not going to be good if we can't pick up callers. All right, let's try it one more. What do you think, Trina? Can we get Lauren? All right, she looks like...
Hi, can you hear me?
Yay, that was on our end, Lauren. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, you were talking about how you were making pierogies, and it reminded me of my Eastern European heritage. Something that we do is we make this, it's our go-to dish when we don't know what else we're doing, and it's so homey, and it reminds me of my grandma, and it's just so easy. So what you do is you take Polish kielbasa, you grill it up with some onions. We like to caramelize those onions first, and then you put a can of tomato paste in there, fill up that can with water, put that in there, and that's all you need.
Wow.
And then we usually serve it up with some broccoli and some lemon onion rice, and the flavors sound really silly, but it was my go-to meal when I'd get home from college. It was easy, and it's something that we do once a week at my home, and it's just delicious.
We had something kind of similar when my kids were younger. It was we'd have store-bought kielbasa and just, like, fry it up with potatoes and carrots and onions. And if people wanted, they could put some ketchup on it. It was, like, literally the easiest thing to cook in the world. Now, do you have a good line? Do you have, like, a good source of good kielbasa?
Actually, yeah. So in Algoma, there is a couple local meat markets. And so one of them is, well, this is in Sturgeon Bay, Marchant Meat. So I go there to grab kielbasa, or sometimes we do ring bologna, whatever's on sale, whatever's cheaper.
Nice. Lauren, thank you so much for sharing that. That sounds great and super easy. It's a special caller-only edition of Food Friday. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with whatever you want to tell us about, what you're cooking tonight, what you're afraid to cook but want to learn, you name it. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kurt is with us now in Madison. Kurt, hi.
Hi. I mostly cook. I rarely bake, but because we're entering into that season, I wanted to share a trick about pumpkin pie that my mother
Ooh.
Taught me.
Oh, what's the trick?
Many people always ask, oh, my God, this is so good. What am I detecting here? So buy the traditional Libby's pumpkin in a can and take the sugar and divide it one-third white, two-thirds dark. And then the secret ingredient is an eighth of a teaspoon of white pepper.
White pepper?
Yes.
Now, how does does it end up tasting peppery, or does it just kind of bring out the other flavors?
What the white pepper imparts is a little bit of a bite in the pumpkin, and then everybody always comments about how, and I think it helps accent the additional brown sugar in there to get it. It's really not sweeter; it's just a little bit more have a caramel component to it. So, yeah, my mom, I'll never forget, and she told me, says, well, I always add a little bit of white pepper.
Interesting. So, now, I'm excited about this,
I've
Kurt.
I've never told anybody.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm excited about it because I've mentioned this on the air. Cinnamon, I have this weird contact reaction to it. It doesn't kill me, but I shouldn't eat it. And so something that's going to add a little extra flavor to my pumpkin pie, that sounds like a great idea. Is there cinnamon in your pumpkin pie, you know, the pumpkin itself?
Actually, there's a particular outfit out of Milwaukee. I don't know if I can plug a company.
Sure.
But they do custom spices, and I'm really fussy about all ingredients. So, yeah, when it comes to cinnamon, there's like five different types of cinnamon that are available through at least the store I buy from. So, yeah, if you want to get even more accent or bring it down, you can go from a mild type cinnamon to something that has actually got quite a bit of bite in it. But in that case, I may not use the white pepper then because it might really overdrive it.
Interesting. Kurt, thank you so much. White pepper in my pumpkin pie. I'm going to try that. Taking your food-related calls on a caller edition of Food Friday at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Mark is with us in New Berlin. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I discovered a delicata squash this year, and it's fantastic. A friend of a friend got some from somebody who was growing them, and I like squash, but I loved delicata, and just cutting it in so you get circles not, don't slice the long way. Cut it so you got circles. Don't scrape anything out. The mesh and the seeds in there, mm-hmm. all great. A little bit of olive oil on them, brush it on, and bake them until they're soft. Well, today, when I was baking mine, not today, but a week or so ago, my second last squash, I cut the whole thing up, I put it in the oven, and I forgot it was in there until I heard it a little bit, and then I smelt it, smelt a little bad. It was, oh man, I was mad because, you know, it was hard to find to begin with, and then I cooked it. But rather than throwing it away, I thought, as it cooled off, I thought, I just want to try a piece of it and see how bad it tastes. I had the same flavor. I had no burnt flavor on it at all. I couldn't believe it. It's such a great squash. You can burn it in the oven and you still use it.
That is awesome, Mark. Thanks a lot. I'm a big fan of the Delicata squash, too. A recent discovery for me as well. It's Food Friday. We are taking your food-related calls, your cooking-related calls. What are you going to cook this weekend? Grill? In the kitchen? You name it. Is there a kitchen adventure you want to embark on? Something new you want to learn? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Hey, if you hit a busy signal or a message, I see a couple lines have opened up. Try again. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll take more of your calls coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We are continuing our spontaneous caller-only edition of Food Friday. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your latest cooking triumphs or failures, what you want to make next, what is on the menu tonight or this weekend. Call 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Nina is with us in Menasha. Nina, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to share that, well, I am I'm biracial. My mother's Eastern European, and my father is Mexican-Spanish. So I grew up eating soul food from both parts of the world, two parts of the world. I grew up making homemade egg noodles that my grandma showed us, and we'd fry it. You put it in you make your homemade noodles, you boil them, and then, you know, al dente, and then you put them in a pan and pan fry them with butter or lard, you know, bacon grease, and with sliced up cabbage, sort of chunky. And that was, and then you can put caraway seeds in there if you want, and just salt and pepper. And that was cabbage and noodles. I grew up eating that. That was nice. Wonderful. And then I, on my dad's side, I learned how to make corn tortillas and homemade flour tortillas, which I still make today. And that is, everybody loves that. I love to make those for people.
Okay. I got to ask, Nina, have you done some fusion cooking? It's like something little Eastern European, little Mexican in the same dish.
Oh, gosh.
Well, something to try. Yeah. I mean, sauerkraut would be great in tacos.
I love cabbage in tacos.
Sure. Well, there you go. Nina, thank you so much for sharing.
This winter, I want to make homemade tamales.
Oh, sign me up. I'll eat some. Thank you so much for calling in, Nina, at 800-642-1234. A lot of good food in that family. Brian joins us now in Dickeyville. Brian, hi.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
Good. What did you want to bring up? Tell us about Brian.
Well, pumpkin bread, fresh from, you know, the pumpkin. The edible is what I use this year, as well as yard-to-table chicken noodle soup and chicken rice soup.
Yard to table. So you've got your own chickens?
Yep. Started this morning at 6 with 10 white meat birds. I got 8 in the freezer and 2 stewing right now, or, you know, simmering for the soup.
Wow. That's about as fresh as soup gets. That is awesome.
That's a big day as well. Yep, it's a good day.
Awesome, Brian. Thank you so much for sharing that. Pumpkin bread. I've had a couple failures with pumpkin bread over the years, and I tracked it down to the baking soda. You got to buy new baking soda every now and then, it turns out, or it gets weird and goopy inside. Not good. Don't recommend. Thank you, Brian. That sounds great, though. We've got Maggie and Charles on the line in Wausau. Hi, y'all.
Hi. I just was calling to share a dish that I like to make sometimes at home, which is taking a head of romaine, and I cut it in half, and just kind of like pour olive oil into the open side of it, and then do salt and pepper and throw it upside down on a pan on the stove and just like saute it for like 5-10 minutes max. And then I'll usually flip it over like 5 on the front, a little bit on the back, and throw some dressing and seeds or whatever on there and do kind of a roasted salad. It's something I saw once in Hawaii at a restaurant, and I really haven't seen it anywhere else, but I share it all the time with friends and family because I think it's so good.
Maggie, that sounds great. And I've seen that at restaurants. This was new and alien to me. How long do you cook that that romaine? Because yeah, obviously it would be easy to overcook, I would think.
Yeah, I kind of do like a medium-high heat for about 5 minutes on the front. It depends how big your head is and how big your pan is. But you do a decent amount of oil, probably about 5 minutes on the front. And then I like to flip it over onto its back and let it just get a little bit of a sear on the back as well.
All right. My head's pretty big and my nose too. Oh, the head of romaine. I get it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Taking your Food Friday calls, you can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you excited to cook? Have you done a big project over the last week? Maybe today, or something on the agenda, on the menu for tomorrow you want to tell us about? Or is there something you want to learn about in the future? Maybe we could talk about it on Food Friday sometime. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. A couple lines just opened up. 800-642-1234. Herb joins us now in Milwaukee. Herb, hello.
Hello. Well, the problem is making a turkey, there's never enough gravy. And so the simple trick I came up with, and for a few more days anyway, you can find turkey parts. So I just buy, you know, backs and tails and wings and stuff like that, the less desirable, and make up about a half a gallon of a good strong turkey broth, and that I and then I use that as the basis for the gravy, and I could make as much gravy as I want to that way, which is convenient for mashed potatoes and also freezing leftovers. But you got to act because the parts disappear in the stores right about now.
Oh, okay. So you got to get them this weekend if you want those extraneous turkey components to make that gravy.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And what kind of flavors, Herb, go into your turkey gravy? Anything special apart from those turkey parts?
No. Well, we put, you know, just a little bit of, parsley and, you know, that's about it. Just the, turkey
straight
parts.
Up.
And then at the end, I enrich it with a little bit of half and half and that, you know, make a roux, that way you have a little fat left over. You can make a roux and then,
nice.
And then thicken the gravy with that, with the turkey fat, which doesn't sound exactly like health food, but, you know, you only live once.
Yeah, that's a special occasion. Herb, thank you so much for sharing that advice. Let's go to Rick now in Madison. Rick, hi.
Hello. The recipe I'm going to describe to you, we've never made before. We're experimenters with cooking and we like international food, and so we're going to try to make a thing called Dorowat, mm-hmm. Dorowat. It's the national dish of Ethiopia. It's a chicken dish that starts out with 4 red onions finely chopped. It takes 2 hours to cook it.
Mm-hmm. Because they cook those onions down a long time, right? Real slow and long?
It must be. The biggest thing is if you're ever going to try to make it, you can get the recipes on all these online recipe sites. You have to immediately make a trip to the herb store because you need things like fenugreek and all these spices that I've never heard of before. In fact, we had to go online and actually order like 3
wow.
different ones that were specially made for this dish in Ethiopia.
Wow.
So, at any rate, I'm looking forward to making it. It's called Dorowat.
Yeah. Rick, thank you so much. I've had Dorowat in restaurants. I've never made it myself, though. So you're going all in, though. I love it, Rick. Good luck. I hope it comes out great. Taking your calls on this edition of Food Friday at 800-642-1234. Carissa joins us now in Rochester, Minnesota. Carissa, hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
What did you want to share with us today, Carissa?
I want to share a funny story about a food failure. And this is actually throwing my dad, my poor, wonderful dad, under the bus. He is a huge fan of food of all kinds. He's not picky, but he does not cook. So when my parents got married years ago, my mom would make pie crust from scratch, and my dad thought that was the best thing ever. And then our kids came along and job changes and moves and that sort of thing, and mom started buying pie crust from the store. Dad started complaining for years. This became a running thing. So she finally said to him about 5 years ago, "You want homemade pie crust? You try and make it yourself." And as I stated, a failure at the beginning, kind of giving away the punchline. There was flour from, we were at my sister's house for Thanksgiving 5 or 6 years ago. There was flour from one end of the kitchen to the other. And in the end, it wasn't very good. So lesson learned, my dad doesn't complain at all about pie crust from the store anymore. And maybe there will be an attempt at it again at some point. But it was, I think he understands now why store-bought crust is.
Fantastic. Carissa, that's a great story. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, I have made my own pie crusts. I like an easy pat in the pan recipe, but I got to say, all things considered, I pretty much just buy a pie crust these days to make a pie or a quiche. Hey, thanks to everybody for helping out. I have a bunch more people on the line now, and we're out of time, though. Thank you so much for calling in with your cooking stories. You can keep doing it, by the way. Can maybe share them on the show next week. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. You can even maybe post a picture of something you are in the midst of cooking right now. And hopefully it isn't just a big puff of flour all over the kitchen this time. And as always, check out lots of great recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. If you don't know what to make tonight or tomorrow, just keep scrolling. You'll find something eventually. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, a Wisconsin psychologist, Ryan Martin, looks at anger in our political system and the unhealthy expressions and the healthy expressions of anger in politics. And you can join in with your own story, what you're seeing maybe in your community. That's Monday morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6, it's 1A Plus with a look at a ceasefire in a 2-year war in East Africa, plus other news from around the world. That's today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, a new poll from the Washington Post and ABC News finds that nearly 9 in 10 Americans are concerned that political divisions in the U.S. have gotten so bad that politically motivated violence has gotten more likely. That poll was conducted after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband was attacked in their San Francisco home last week. Our next guest has studied conflict all around the world and says things don't have to be this way. In fact, she says we know what can help dial down the tension, and we've barely even started doing it here in the U.S. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about political violence maybe tied to next week's election or in the future? Are you discouraged by the divisiveness, the polarization, the negativity in politics? What do you want to see from politicians, from the media, to start bridging some divides? And have you found ways in your own life to disagree with people, but still relate to and talk with them? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Amanda Ripley is a journalist, author, and host of the How To podcast. Her books include High Conflict, How We Get Trapped, and How We Get Out. She recently wrote about preventing political violence in the Washington Post. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me. Always good to be with you.
Yeah, good to have you back. Now, I mentioned that one data point, this survey from ABC and the Washington Post, people worried more than they had been previously about political violence. Does that match up with what you're seeing, at least when it comes to perception of a painfully divided country?
Definitely. I think most Americans are exhausted by the political conflict that we're in and worried about the future and rightly worried about violence.
Now, in that recent piece I mentioned, you wrote, "We have not even begun to do the most basic things you would do if you wanted to interrupt this conflict." And this part of this may come as news to people. There are ways. There are strategies. What kind of starting points can we have to try to bridge these gaps that we're not doing right now?
Well, One thing I learned in following people and communities, even countries who have reduced political violence and shifted out of really toxic, dysfunctional conflict, is that any intuitive thing you do is not going to work. So you really have to do counterintuitive things. And so we luckily know a lot about what those things are. And the US government has pushed politicians in many other countries that have been in far worse conflicts to do some basic things that we know dial down the heat a little bit and reduce the odds of political violence. Like, for example, all over the world, the US government has pushed politicians to sign what are sometimes called codes of conduct or non-aggression pacts. And gang violence interrupters do this every day in America. So it's a way to say, hey, we've gotten to a place where there are no rules of engagement anymore. Anything goes. And it's really dangerous because when people feel really threatened, when political leaders keep giving them reasons to feel really threatened, they are much more likely to resort to violence, including people who are, you know, mentally unstable or in pain for other reasons. But those, that language really matters. And so one of the things that you would do is to say, hey, get a bunch of influential politicians from all sides into a room. What are some things that we would like to change about how we're treating each other? Maybe it's to not dehumanize your opponent on social media by saying they're evil or hate America, right? Or maybe it's to vow to accept the results of an election after reasonable due process. Almost always you commit to condemning acts of violence, especially when they're perpetrated against the other side. So these are just basic things that we ask other countries to do, even when they're emerging from civil war. And so that would be one thing we would want to ask our own politicians to do.
We're talking to Amanda Ripley, author of the book High Conflict, about techniques, proven ways in many countries around the world to dial down political conflict, how they could apply here in the U.S. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Amanda, people might hear the idea of, okay, let's get Democrats and Republicans, say, to sit down and come together on these ground rules. And it sounds maybe a little naive and something you can't imagine politicians doing. But you reference this ad here from the candidates for governor in Utah 2 years ago. We got a Republican and a Democrat here. I want to give a listen.
We are both equally dedicated to the American values of democracy, liberty, and justice for all people.
We just have different opinions on how to achieve those ideals.
But today, we are setting aside those differences to deliver a message that is critical for the health of our nation.
That whether you vote by mail or in person, we will fully support the results of the upcoming presidential election, regardless of the outcome.
Although we sit on different sides of the aisle, we are both committed to American civility and a peaceful transition of power.
I mean, that's pretty cool, but it's really unique. I don't see a lot of other stuff like this. Do we need more of this kind of thing?
Yeah, and, you know, that ad ended up going viral and gave both candidates an unexpected boost. And then, so I, we do know there's a yearning for it among voters. Even though we think there's not, there is. And researchers recently tested the ad and found, in a huge sample of 32,000 people, and found that it reduced significantly reduced support for partisan violence. So anyway, yeah, we need more of these to answer your question, Rob. And, you know, to this question of, well, isn't this naive? Why, how could you ever get some of these political leaders, especially the most influential ones, to the table? I had the same objection, right? It seems just Pollyanna. And so I brought that same question. This is the only thing I know how to do, is to ask other people who know more than I do. And so I brought it to Curtis Toler, who does gang violence interruption in Chicago. And I brought it to Neilan Parker, who works for Search for Common Ground USA and has worked in conflict zones all over the world. And they both said, Amanda, it always feels impossible. But here's the thing. All these people, even the ones who are really benefiting from the conflict, you know, they're raising money off of it, they're getting power and attention, votes, right? Even those people, most of them, not all, but most of them do not want to get hurt or for their family to get hurt. And that's the argument. That's the sales pitch you use with gang leaders, with guerrilla members, in other countries in civil war. It's the same argument because no one wants to die, right? And most people, what Curtis has found in gang violence interruption, most people would like to get out of the conflict or at least have it change and be less toxic. But no one has asked them. No one has invited them. So you have to be smart about it. You have to be strategic about how you do this. But the idea that none of these people will come to the table just isn't supported by history or the evidence.
Now, I want to spend most of our time on things that do work. But you mentioned earlier that in a conflict situation, a high conflict situation in particular, there might be intuitive things that seem obvious. And you said a lot of those don't work. Can you give us an example of something that, you know, on the gut level sounds like the way to resolve this conflict that doesn't?
Right. Well, you know, vowing to destroy the other side in the next election would be one example, right? Or to impeach the president, right? Like, these are all worthwhile endeavors, and it's important to hold people accountable, but it doesn't tend to interrupt high conflict because high conflict operates really differently from normal conflict. It's the kind of thing where people are so dug in that they make a lot of mistakes. And so everything feels like a threat, including things that aren't threatening. So, you know, in a smaller conflict, it might be, you know, if I can just argue the facts with my relative who disagrees with me, if I can just, you know, crush them with statistics and controlled research studies, that they will change their mind. Again, doesn't work. That just is not how people, unfortunately, not how people work, especially in this kind of conflict, where it's much more emotional. It's much more about belonging, about humiliation, about a fear of our kids not belonging in the future. So if we're not speaking to those things, then it's not going to work.
We're talking to journalist Amanda Ripley, author of the book High Conflict, looking at the fear of violence in an election year and more generally the political divide, the increasingly conflictual political divide it feels like in the United States, how to keep in perspective and start improving our political rhetoric and the way we talk to and about each other. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this, that ad you just heard? Would you want to see Tony Evers and Tim Michaels do an ad like that, Mandela Barnes and Ron Johnson? Do you want to see less divisive language from politicians across the board? Are you worried about these conflicts? Have you found ways to bridge gaps, maybe in your own household, your own family, your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with journalist and author Amanda Ripley about political divisions in this election year, the threat of political violence, and the tools that are out there that can help us move out of deeply rooted conflicts. Things that have worked after civil wars around the world, dealing with gang violence, and that could maybe help the American political system. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Edward is with us in Milwaukee. Edward, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. The first observation I've got is, you know, to compare political opponents to gangs is, you know, it does seem outrageous, and yet I think your guest has great ideas. It just seems to me that nobody is held to account, to be accountable for what they do anymore, and it's really frustrating for me as a you know, as an American citizen, and I would love to be part of a movement that would achieve this. And thank you, guest, for coming on.
Edward, thanks for that call. Let's start with that last thing he said first, Amanda. He would love to become part of a movement to achieve some of the things you are talking about. Is there such a movement? How could somebody like Edward get involved?
You know, I think that movement is underway. And it gives me heart, it gives me strength to hear Edward say that. I think it's going to take a bunch of different forms. It's not going to be one unified you know, website we can all sign on to, but some of the ones that I feel like are doing some creative work in this space would be Starts With Us, which is an organization that is trying to kickstart that movement. Also, Braver Angels has done a lot of work in helping us rehumanize each other and understand each other, even as we continue to disagree. And there are lots of others, but you're not alone. I can tell you that much, Edward, for sure.
Thanks for the call, Edward. Edward also talks about a lack of consequences as he sees it, where, and I think we've seen some of this, okay, this norm gets violated, and we look around, and it doesn't seem to be a big consequence of it, so maybe it gets pushed a little further and a little further. How do we stop that? Who holds someone accountable if someone on one side is doing that sort of thing?
Yeah, there's sometimes a game that a trap I fall into in my own head. I don't know if this is familiar to your listeners, but where something really insane will happen, and I'll think automatically in my head, I'll think, oh, this will be the thing. This will be the thing that convinces everybody that this has gone too far, right? Or that this person needs to be held accountable. And then I've learned enough about this kind of conflict to understand that, unfortunately, that's pretty much never true, but that's just not the way humans behave in an us versus them malignant conflict like that, because we get so dug in and so threatened by the other side that we will rationalize and justify almost anything, mostly out of fear of the alternative, you know? So that doesn't mean that people can't be reached. I mean, most Americans are not on the extremes of this particular conflict, but it does mean that the conflict doesn't operate according to the ways healthy conflict operates, where people do get held accountable by voters, if nothing else.
Let's go to Samuel now in Neenah. Samuel, hi.
Hi, you hear me?
Loud and clear, Samuel. Go ahead.
Great. So my question is to the guest, is what are the situations and scenarios socially that we might find ourselves in where we might talk to somebody from the other side in that situation where they're open to hearing ideas that they don't necessarily agree with, that the conversation doesn't devolve into hostility immediately, or the conversation is avoided completely because the scenario is not right? Like, what are those situations when it's okay to talk about this and it's actually maybe useful if it's approached the right way?
Samuel, that's a fantastic question. And Amanda, I'll say at listener events, I've heard versions of that question from other people, even talking about, you know, their own family members and things like that. What advice do you have about having those kind of conversations?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of advice out there, and I find it mostly kind of unhelpful because it feels really pat and kind of one-dimensional. And in fact, this is really hard and it requires practice and care and a very different mindset. So I'm really excited because recently I was able to do a podcast. I host this podcast called How To. Mm-hmm. And we were able to actually coach two adult siblings who wanted to change how they debate politics with their father, coach them with an expert who does this from Braver Angels, the organization I just mentioned. Her name is Monica Guzman. And then with their dad's permission, they recorded the long conversation they then had, which you usually don't get to hear. So my bottom line is, to understand this, to do it better, we need to see and hear more examples of it over and over and over. Because part of how we've gotten into this mess is by seeing and hearing examples of the opposite, right? Often led by, you know, cable TV news or national politicians. So for me, it's really, really helpful to hear examples of what this looks like. And a lot of it is giving up on agreeing and getting really, really interested in understanding. Because most people, they need to feel heard before they will listen. And there are some really good tips and tricks for making that happen. So it's an excellent question that I think most people are really struggling with. And we need to get more skilled about how we argue about politics and, you know, everything else.
If you want to hear an example of that, we're going to get a link to the How To podcast at WPR.org/Central Time. That'll be in the segment note for this conversation with Amanda Ripley, author of the book High Conflict, looking at ways to dial down political tensions here in the United States. how can we find situations to have more conversations like this, Amanda? As you mentioned, it's not that easy if two people from one side just get together and talk without any kind of guidance. There's a good chance it's not going to go well.
Right. So I definitely don't recommend just plunging in. You know, I think that's not a good idea. And again, gets back to that big takeaway, which is like any intuitive thing you do in high conflict to get out of the conflict will almost certainly make it worse. So what does that mean? Well, Braver Angels has a bunch of resources for this and actual workshops and debates that you can go to practice these skills. There's also something called Living Room Conversations. Livingroomconversations.org is the address. And they have a bunch of guides for actually, you know, intentionally, purposefully creating gatherings, either virtually or in person, with conversation guides and some like guardrails in place so that those conversations will go better. So those are two places to look into.
I want to ask you about, and we've talked about this in the past, in any conflict, there are often people who perceive, hey, I benefit from this conflict, or I benefit, or my side benefits from this conflict escalating. Conflict entrepreneurs, you call them. How do we try to remove their power in these conflicts?
You know, I think conflict entrepreneurs, I mean, first of all, we can all be conflict entrepreneurs, especially in a climate like this, especially when we've developed a bunch of social media platforms to incentivize conflict entrepreneurs. But yeah, I mean, people who inflame and sort of incite conflict for their own ends, whether it's profit or, you know, just as often it's for attention or a sense of belonging or being important. All those things are really, really powerful right now. So it's something we can all have to sort of be careful about. The first thing is to notice who are the conflict entrepreneurs in your orbit, whether it's in your social media feed or in your news feed most often, and maybe consider literally turning down the volume, like distancing yourself, because people who make a career out of, you know, really exploiting conflict tend to have a lot of damage in their own past that they either haven't been able or willing to deal with yet. And hopefully they will one day, but typically they tend to just spread that pain around over time. So, you know, just for your own peace of mind, it's important to recognize who conflict entrepreneurs are at any given time. Try not to be one, and then try to distance yourself from them. And I think we in the news media have to get much better at turning down the volume on conflict entrepreneurs, of recognizing that continuing to amplify this isn't helping in the way we think it will. You know, we think, oh, if we could just draw attention to these outrageous things that people are saying, they will stop. And to Edward's point, your caller earlier, that's not how this works.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Amanda, things might look a little dark now. Do you feel, and I think I ask you this every time, do you feel some optimism at this point?
And what do I say every time? Every time I say yes. And I think, look, I don't, you know, optimism might be strong. I do feel hope. Sometimes things do have to get worse before they get better. I suspect that is true here, unfortunately, just people being people. And because we've not tried many of these things, I do feel some, ironically, some hope, because if we just did a bunch of basic things, this would get better. And so that gives me hope.
Amanda, we'll leave it there. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
That's Amanda Ripley, journalist and author. Her books include High Conflict, How We Get Trapped and How We Get Out. We talked to her about dialing down political tensions as next week's election approaches and what to do about it. You can find her recent article on that link to WPR.org/Central Time, plus her how-to podcast with an example of a guided conversation between two people who disagree with each other that doesn't, I guess, I haven't listened myself, doesn't end in tears and bitterness. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, a new partnership between police agencies and the Veterans Administration aims to boost gun safes and gun safety. A police chief joins the show to share the details. Plus, from wound treatment to scurvy prevention, we'll look at a new book about attempted medicinal uses of alcohol. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.